Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia. Apriremo quelle gabbie, fili eco criminali. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Animal liberation.
Hi and welcome to Freedom of Species, a show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. You just heard Sally with Out of the Pan, and really interesting episode about connections with autism and issues around sexuality, etc. You can check that out if you missed that show via 3cr.org.au/out of the pan or search Out of the Pan on your favourite podcast app and make sure you subscribe there as well. We are going to do a show that I'll let Meg introduce. Go ahead, Meg.
Yes, welcome everyone to the show. So today's show is all about vegan parenting the next compassionate generation. So Nick has just introduced himself. Hi, my name is Meg. I'm another co-host on the show. We also have walking around, who you might have heard, Mumu, one of our non-human guests, who was one of Nick's family members, Mumu the dog. And our human guests today, we have two parents of vegan children. We have Lydia and we also have Mark. Welcome to the show, both Lydia and Mark. How are you?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Excellent. So it's quite an interesting topic and, you know, one that's been controversial in the past and one that is constantly evolving over time. Being the parent of a vegan child, raising a vegan child, having a child who could then convert to veganism and you know, how do you deal with that, etc. Maybe what we can do is for the two of you, just have a bit of an introduction to your family, your children, how old are they, you know, how long have they been vegan, etc. Starting with you, Lydia.
Yeah, so my husband and I went vegan in 2017. When we were living in London.
So you both went vegan at the same time.
That's right.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we did Veganuary.
Nice.
Yeah, which was really big in the UK at that time. And a colleague was vegetarian and she was doing Veganuary. So we joined not ever thinking for a moment that it would become a lifetime thing.
Like a lot of people with Veganuary.
Such an important campaign. Mm. And I think a couple of weeks in, we'd done a lot of research, we'd watched all the videos, we'd sort of relearned to cook and we just thought we just can't go back. It was, you know, I guess a lot of people would have had the same experience where it's this rude awakening, you can't sleep for days and, yeah, there was no turning back. So when we found out that we were going to become parents in 2018, there was no question that we would raise our child vegan. And then we found out that we were having twins. And one of my first thoughts was, honestly, I'm really glad that they'll have each other, because that was one of my things that I was a bit worried about in terms of, you know, having one kid in their future school having to kind of be the weirdo vegan. Yeah. So I was really glad that they had each other, and I still am really glad that they have each other. Yeah, they were born in 2019. They're nearly five now. Yeah.
Amazing. So that's and they've been vegan all their lives.
They've been vegan all their lives, yeah. They were actually born in Norway and we moved back to Australia last year. So, yeah, little Norwegian kids, but they've forgotten all their Norwegian now, sadly.
Aww.
Yeah.
And we'll get back to that a bit later in the show in regards to the differences between raising kids in Norway as a vegan and raising them here in Australia. But what we might do now is introduce Mark and he can talk about his family and his kid.
Hello. I'm a father of a 16-year-old. And he's from what I like to think of as a bit of a blended family, because his mum eats meat, and I was vegan when he was born. And as our life was, we or is, we work out a compromise, and my wife's family were a little bit concerned. So anyway, so our son, the blended bit was he would be a vegetarian, and so there was one of each of us. It's like one of those jokes, you know, a meat eater, a vegetarian, and a vegan go to a bar, and hilarity, you know, ensues. Anyway, so as we were going along, I came across on YouTube a speech by at a university in America by a fellow called Gary Yourofsky. Awesome, hour and 24 or so minutes long. I still remember that, and I asked my wife to have a look at it because I was, you know, still kind of on her case a bit about maybe she could come over to our side, so to speak. And she watched it, which was terrific. She watched it all, and when she finished watching it, she said, "When our son decides to be vegan, I will support it 100%. So it wasn't, there was never any if he will, or it's just when he will. And so then I went and found someone called Bite Size Vegan. She's Emily Moran, has a YouTube, massive YouTube channel and stuff, lots of stuff, but she specifically has a kids section where she had interviewed vegan kids, and also where she did like YouTube clips of why we don't eat meat, but directly for kids.
Which is a powerful thing.
Yeah, what's up with dairy? I don't know, something like, is honey bee bath or something, you know. And so I showed our boy those, and that was it. From then on, he's been vegan, and he's about 10 years in now. So I'm at 21 years, and he's at 10. So, and we're still working on Mama.
And that's powerful that he made the decision as well. So what age was he that he made the decision to go vegan?
Six.
He made the decision to go vegan at six.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, I know that we don't have with the both of you, your children were vegetarian or vegan from birth, and so they didn't really sort of have that eye-opening thing of, you know, I'm eating a lamb on the plate. This is actually a lamb that's gambling out in the paddock. You know, I don't want to do this anymore, Mum and Dad. They've woken up to what meat was. And I think it's really good when a kid does that in the average family. When they do that, if they have peers that are vegan or vegetarian, you know, around them, they can go to Mum and Dad, well, you know, little Jimmy doesn't eat meat. You know, I can do this too because he can. I know he can. So it's such a powerful thing. I mean, the both of you have kids who are at school who are someone who other people see as maybe not a role model, but something that's normalizing a vegan lifestyle, and something that's actually being quite powerful for their peers to see that around them. I wonder if, you know, I mean, it's such a big thing for them to be the token vegan or whatever. Can you tell me, maybe if we start with you, Lydia, are there any other vegans or vegetarians in your child's primary school? Have there been any pitfalls or issues? And also, you know, are they aware that they're different, that they're vegan, and how does that pan out with social interactions?
Yeah, in Norway there wasn't. There were kids who, so they have been in sort of childcare since they were 15 months, and they're still not at primary school, it's still at kinder. So, yeah, in Norway there wasn't. There were definitely sympathetic families in terms of ones that probably had meat-free Mondays and understood, you know, that it was an okay thing and that we weren't killing our children by making them be vegan, etc. Here in Melbourne, it's definitely a little bit more diverse. There are some vegetarian families, and I've spoken to a number of parents, and no one's kind of said, oh, where do they get their protein? Whereas that was definitely a question that
That's
we got
fantastic.
A lot in Norway. But yeah, in terms of their experience, that so they are the only vegans at their kinder, and they'll often sort of talk about how they understand it a lot as cow's milk. That's what we explain sometimes if we're at the supermarket and they say, can I have this? And I'll say, oh, it's got cow's milk in it. So often they're like, oh, that kid's not cow's milk, mummy. Or that kid has cow's milk and we don't have cow's milk. So that's kind of how they differentiate. But most of the time, yeah, I don't think that they feel like they're missing out. We try and provide a lot of sort of alternatives. I probably have some examples to go back to, but I know they're pretty informed. We've talked a lot about, you know, read a lot of books and talked a lot about what veganism is and like different choices that different people make and why we make them and things like that. So, yeah, I think we haven't sort of had any super negative experiences apart from the fact that sometimes they'll come home and say it was such and such's birthday and they had cake and we didn't get to have any because I had cow's milk, but we'd try and mitigate that by sending cupcakes or something to a kinder and making them store them in the freezer so that they have as an alternative if that situation arises out of the blue.
Yeah. Great idea. And one of the things I've also noticed over the 28 years I've been vegan is that the range of products out there has increased substantially, but also the range of products that appeal to kids, things like nuggets and sweets and things like that normalize it for them, that you can offer them, which is great. Mark, do you want to talk about your child? And your child's in high school at 16?
He is,
yes. So just talk about his experiences and how he went.
That thing about the food, things like we've always had pretty good parties at our house, birthday parties, and like all the kids who had allergies were just barfing down cake, you know, scarfing down cake, and the other kids, the meat eating kids, going, oh, these nuggets, like you just said, they're awesome. And so, yeah, we've always had those sorts of things, and hopefully, you know, hopefully there's nuggets of goodness come out of that. That's sort of as a byproduct of the life that we've chosen. School has been, you know, it's always been a bit of a battle, and our son has just moved school this year to start again, to get away from being bullied for being kind. So we're starting afresh with that, so, and new people who can see what kindness looks like.
And that's always a hard thing, because it is tough for a child and also a teenager finding their own identity to actually go against the grain and have that as part of their identity. And when they come up against negativity and judgment, it's so hard for them, and it must be so isolating for them. But
definitely,
you know, when, you know, say in a school that where there's not that many, you know, vegans or vegetarians, if a child can know one, like when I was looking into veganism when I was in high school, I knew no one, absolutely no one. I would have gone vegan a lot quicker if I had have actually known someone and put a face to that face of kindness. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that we can do, is raise children who are, you know, secure in their kindness and are coming up against these things, but people are seeing that they can prevail, which is really good. Yeah. Now, I know that there were some issues that, say, Lydia, you spoke about in differences between, you know, the kids growing up in Norway, you know, when they were, especially when they were very young. You know, can you tell us about a little bit about what happened with you in the issues you had when you first gave birth with regards to things like breastfeeding and formula?
Yeah, and I was actually speaking to my partner about this, and he reminded me of a few other things that might have been forgotten in that postpartum fog. When we knew that we were having twins, we were really determined, I was really determined to, you know, breastfeed and do everything as naturally as possible. But we stocked up on a bit of contingency dairy-free formula from the UK before I gave birth, just in case. And then when I did give birth, there were lots of complications that were medical negligence, basically, but we won't go into that on this podcast. That's a different podcast or a different radio segment. Which meant that breastfeeding was made more challenging. And Norway's a really, you know, when you think of the Scandinavian countries, they have the highest rates of breastfeeding, and the nurses and whatnot are really supportive. But from when people found out that we were vegan, they made a lot of assumptions. And the nurses, I remember after the complications, said, you're going to have to just use formula. We've got this formula here. Didn't really show me at all what to do. I had to, in a really poor state of health, kind of fight for a breast pump, to be able to help to stimulate milk after I'd had a couple of days sort of out of action, really. And yeah, they kind of did a few sort of token, this is how you could try and tandem breastfeed, but there was no real like proper support given. It was more just assumed, hey, you've had a lot of blood loss, you've got twins, you're vegan, you're going to just have to use formula.
Oh, that sounds quite traumatic.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there was so much trauma involved. But I, partly because I knew that there was no vegan formula readily available or dairy-free formula, I sort of fought my way through it and ended up for the first year of their life breastfeeding and supplementing with the dairy-free formula that we would order online and stock up on when we would go overseas, and ended up, you know, being able to breastfeed for quite a long time, which I'm so thankful for. But at the same time, we didn't receive, you know, sort of any support or help. And I do think that because we were vegan, there was this sort of feeling like, oh, let's just, you know, make it a bit harder so that they can get the cow's milk, because the babies need the cow's milk. That was kind of the feeling that I got from the medical staff. And then when we brought them home, we had a lot of extra for the first kind of 2 or 3 years of our life. We felt like we had every time we took them to the health station, which is like the maternal health station here, or had a visitor in home, we felt every time so anxious about their judgment based on us being vegan, and like sort of these comments about, oh, but babies need iron and they need this and they need that, and how are they going to get that because you're vegan? This was despite the fact that I'd had 2 twins full term, which is, you know, pretty rare, big healthy babies who scored sort of really high on their Apgar test. So obviously, like, as a vegan woman, I'd carried them and nourished them to the point where they were big, strong, healthy babies. But we did feel for sort of the first couple of years of their life that there was a lot of judgment, and we were always like, oh my God, are they going to take them off us because we're feeding them vegan food? And, you know, you hear these horror stories from Italy about like vegan parents being negligent and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it was, that's what experience we had. I'm not sure what experience we would have had in Australia, because that wasn't our journey, but yeah.
It's definitely good to know, you know, different birth experiences and infant experiences in different parts of the world. I had a vegan pregnancy, and my son was vegan up until a year of age, until his vegetarian dad took over as primary carer. I know that, you know, I was a full-term pregnancy as well. He scored well on the Apgar test. He was, you know, high weight. He was, you know, top growth percentile, etc. But unfortunately, I still, and this wasn't really health professionals, I still got a lot of pushback from family members who said, you know, I just have to give up this vegan phase now for the health of the baby, etc. You know, trying to stage an intervention, trying to say that, you know, as soon as he's able to, they're going to feed him fish oil and stuff for his brain. And, you know, it was, you know, as you know, it sounds like you had a much worse and traumatic situation, you know, than I had. To actually fight through that, through ill-perceived notions of the, I mean, to put it really clearly, there are now many peak bodies across the world, peak nutrition, dietitian, dietetic bodies, who now say that a vegan diet is suitable for all stages of life. That includes, you know, pregnancy, birth, child, toddler, all the way up. And that is, it's a fact. And people need to understand this. And we're not even going to go into, oh, is a vegan diet okay for children? Because the professionals have spoken. We're just going to go on the assumption of the professionals. So it sounds like it was really such a horrible experience for you to go through a birth that wasn't great, but then also have to advocate because of these ill-informed predisposition, you know, preconceived notions about veganism. Going a little bit further on to where they are now, do you think with regards to kindergarten, et cetera, how do they interact with their friends in regards to the compassionate lifestyle that you've raised them in?
And sorry to jump in there, but I'm just thinking time-wise, I wonder if keep that for after the first
Why don't
song?
We do, yeah. yes, I didn't yeah. realise yeah. the time. Yeah. Yes, so we're actually going to go to, so we'll keep that question for the next stage. Thank you, Nick, for that. So the music that we're playing today is from a local outfit called Privateer, and the first song is a song called A Warning Dream.
I wonder, what is the point? keep calling out, keep falling down.
DigiChew, People, Place, Language, connecting stories, culture and language across Australia. Contribute your content in digitube.com.au. Sign up for a free account and select your options for streaming, download and broadcast promotion.
A 3CR supporter.
That's right. This is Brother West from the American Empire trying to keep alive the legacy of John Coltrane, Curtis Mayfield, Nina Simone, and I am so glad you are listening to 3CR because 3CR is a force for good. It's telling the truth and allows you both to laugh, not at, but with others. Oh, what a grand radio station it is.
Welcome back. You are listening to 3CR's Freedom of Species. Here in the studio, we have Nick and myself, Megan, as co-hosts. We have Mumu wandering around the studio, Mumu the dog. And we have our two guests, Lydia and Mark. And the topic today is vegan parenting, raising the next compassionate generation. So before we actually went to a break, we were talking about how these vegan kids relate to their peers. And Lydia, we were going to talk to you about how your kids talk to their peers and interact with their peers with regards to the compassionate lifestyle that they lead.
Yeah, it's hard for me because I haven't observed it, firsthand. I'm not there during the day when they're at kinder. But I really noticed that compared to other kids, they are a lot more, obviously, a lot more aware about sort of animals being sentient and feeling like we feel and things like that. For example, we had friends that came over and we lived fairly close to the beach when we'd just moved, and one of the friends' kids said to my little boy, "Oh, it'd be really cool if you got a fishing rod and you could go fishing. Fishing's really fun." And my little boy's pretty shy and he like rarely speaks to strangers. He kind of like shies away. But he said in this quiet little voice, like you wouldn't know he's actually people listening maybe who know my kid are like, he's not shy. He's not shy if you know him, but he's really shy if you don't know him. And he said in this quiet little voice, "That's not kind. We don't do that. The fish don't like that. The fish are our friends." And, you know, he's only four. And she, and he looked at me sort of like with this like look on his face, like, "Is that right, mummy?"
Aww.
And I was like, oh my God, my heart melted. I was like, oh yeah, baby, you know, like, and I felt so proud of him for like using his little voice. And she kind of, the little girl, I mean, she's, you know, only seven. She kind of nervously laughed, I think, and like sort of looked at me and looked at him as if like we were both a bit crazy. And then, you know, yeah. Everyone went off on their merry way. But yeah, so it's like examples like that. And when I talk to the, I often check in with the kids and sort of say like, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Like when it comes to like being vegan at kinder, because it's noticeable, right? Like they're eating this different food. Like often I'll go to pick them up and their teachers will be like, "Oh, I wasn't sure if they could eat this. Can they eat this?" And like wave it around kind of thing. Mm. And so obviously like their friends and whatnot know that they're eating different food. But at this stage, because they're so young, you know, it's lucky, obviously talking off air, Mark's having some different experiences. As the kids get older, I know that we're going to face different challenges. Right now though, they, I feel like they're coping beautifully well, and I sort of check in and I'm like, are you, you know, do you like being vegan? It's a weird question, but, you know, like, do you feel different? And they will say sometimes, yeah, we feel different. And I say, well, you know, is that okay? And they're like, yeah, that's okay. So, yeah.
That's a good thing to do, to check in with them and talk about the issues.
Yeah.
It means that if there's any difficulties coming up in the future, that they're more likely to come to you with these issues because they know that you check in on them and you like to talk to them about them.
God, that's the hope, isn't it? Yeah.
It's always the hope of a parent. Absolutely. That's the hope. That's always. And so, you know, we were talking off air about some issues that come up, and you're not quite there at the moment, but you most likely be facing these issues, and it's good to talk about these. And both myself, as a parent of a veggie kid who's a vegan, myself vegan, my son's vegetarian lifelong, and as a parent of a vegan kid, we have had, you know, older kids, we've had issues with regards to things that are, you know, quite that we don't morally subscribe to with school programs. And one of the things that we came up with was the egg hatching programs in schools, which breaks my heart. I have always been quite saddened by these, even when I was a child and not vegan or vegetarian. And I'll talk about my experience with it, and then we can talk about your experience, because I like to end on a bit of a positive note with that issue. When my son was in primary school, they said they were going to do the egg hatching program, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And I'd actually sort of already preempted this. So I'd done a bit of research. I'd talked to Edgar's Mission about resources, etc. And I came up with a file, and I came up with an idea that I went to speak to them about. And unfortunately, one of the things that really was not in my favour was I was the only one that was actually speaking up about this. This was, you know, 15 odd years ago. And even in, you know, the northern suburbs, it was something that was still not, it was still seen as quite a normal thing. So I went up to the teacher and I went up to the coordinator of the program and I said, look, this is actually, you know, this is not a great thing to do because of X, Y, Z. I talked about, you know, the chickens and the fact that they need their mothers and, you know, the fact that they learn off their mothers. It's actually quite a traumatizing thing for them to bond with, you know, children that aren't, you know, going to give them anything. And also the fact that when they, I did ask, where do the chicks go after the hatching program is ended? And that was something they hadn't actually thought about. And they said, oh, they go back to the farm. And I said, the farm that they come from, can I please get the number of the farm that they come from? I would like to speak with them. And she's like, oh, they just go back to the farm. Like, they didn't question it. They didn't, you know, there was no questioning at all. And I rang the farm and they were very reticent to give me any information whatsoever. And I think we know why, as, you know, people who see this as quite as something objectionable. And unfortunately, in my case, even though I said to them, you know, these are the reasons, I outlined them, I was logical, I was cool and calm and collected. I even actually said to them, I can buy these fully like plasticized models of the chicks developing in the eggs. I will buy them for you for all the classes, et cetera, at my own expense. You know, I can get people to come to you, you know, to talk about these issues who've raised chickens, et cetera, and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, the chicken hatching program went ahead because wow. I was the only voice that was objecting to it. But even then, I believe that my voice putting, you know, voicing my objection to it, even though I was a lone voice, I think it started something and really sort of made it clear to them that this was something that's going to be controversial. So I want to throw it over to you, Mark, because you've actually got a bit more of a positive story about a chick hatching program with your child,
positivity,
which is nice. And this is good. And again, how long ago was this? So this was what?
I don't know, 10.
Yeah, so about 5 years after, or 5 or 6 about, years after my child.
Out in the eastern suburbs. And, so there was another family as well as ours that didn't think it was a good idea. And we got together and sort of wrote a big list of why we didn't think it was any good and what they could do, like with those models you were talking about. We didn't offer to buy them for them, though. should have thought of that. But
I was gung-ho. I was so ready to get them to
stop. No, we thought the school should buy them.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, they definitely should.
And basically it was just sort of, it seemed like it was just given to a teacher to do that, to organise the chickens to come and or the eggs. And when the principal got a big list of complaints, I suppose, or other ideas as well, so the teacher just went, okay, well, we won't do it.
Just to clarify, was it, I know that it was you and another family that started it. Did you have other people come on board and also voice their objections? So it was just the two families.
And so the teacher said, well, you know, we won't do it then. We'll just move on. So I don't know if they do it again now or if they've kept not doing it. I've got no idea because it was primary school.
But so, that's a big win in the fact that you made it inconvenient enough or controversial enough to actually have them consider that maybe it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah.
And so the seeds then again for future programs, like are we going to have people object to this? Should we in the end really do this?
Yeah.
And pave the way for inserting more compassion, kindness and thought with regards to treatment of animals in school programs. So
Definitely, yes.
And that is a big win.
I was going to say for Meg's example as well, like often people don't, that's a really great win in that case, but often people don't just change their mind instantly. But maybe that person you raised it to at the school, maybe they went vegan 12 years later or something like that. Yeah. It can always be just
we never know when we sow the seeds. Yeah. And it could be that that's something that they took into account for the next program. Gosh, some other crazy lady's going to come up and object to it. Maybe this is not as much, like maybe this is not worth it kind of thing.
Why do they do it anyway? Like what are they learning that you can't learn?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not because it's such an entrenched structure of our like school programs. School programs have been doing this for decades and decades. And it is something that they, I think, see. Well, because they see animals as units. These are units of education. You know, in our food industry, animals are units of production.
Mm.
In these school programs, animals are units of education. And, you know, I think that it was actually quite powerful and they did get quite upset when I said, where do those chickens go back to?
Mm.
And when I came back to them and I said, this farm couldn't give me an answer as to the fate of the chickens, that is on you to find that out. And if you don't, you are complicit in not knowing what the fate of these chickens are because you're the ones that run the program. And I mean, it was so scary for me. And look, you'll find this, like you get treated like the crazy person. You get treated like, look, why don't you just shut up? No one else is complaining. Nobody else has a problem with this. And in that point, when we talk about things that are morally not great that we have to object to, when the first person gets up to stand up, sometimes that can be the catalyst for change. And it's the same with our kids. When another kid wakes up and I'll just really quickly talk to you about this phenomena that I used to do a lot of time working for an organisation called Vegetarian Victoria. Thousands of hours talking to people on the streets at stalls. And what I found happened about 15 to 20 years ago, as we talked about the phenomena of a kid looking at the plate going, oh my gosh, this is meat. This is the lamb or the cow that's in the paddock. I don't want to do this anymore. The reply to a lot of those kids a couple of decades ago was, shut up. This is what we eat. Just get over it or starve. And the kid would go back to sleep and that would be the end of it. But about 15 to 20 years ago, there was this phenomenon that we were seeing happen. And what would happen is the kid would wake up. They'd say, oh, my gosh, this is meat on my plate. It's an animal. I don't want to eat it. And then because people were sort of coming around, they weren't going to become vegetarian, but their kid was, you know, like they were absolutely disgusted at what this was. Okay, let's find out how we give, you know, little Chloe a vegetarian diet. Like how do we raise them to be this? Let's get some support. These people were willing to support us. And that was a really fundamental change because 15 to 20 years ago when that kid woke up, she didn't stay asleep. She didn't go back to sleep. And now her and her generation are the animal activists and the vegans and the vegetarians of today. And that's huge. That is absolutely huge. And the fact that you're raising vegetarian children gives the catalyst for those kids to continue to remain awake even if they have pushback from their parents. It's such a powerful thing. You have no idea how powerful it is. I've seen it with my son, who turned his best friend vegetarian, and then his peers later on in high school turned his best friend who turned vegetarian vegan. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
It's really encouraging to hear that, because as I've been reflecting for this as well, I was I often think about this. When I was a kid, in the car, we went past, I don't know what it was, a building, and it had a graffiti on it. So it would have been probably the early 90s maybe by this stage. And it said, meat is murder. But I remember saying to my mum, what does that mean, meat is murder? Because I knew murder was like when you get killed, when you die, or when somebody gets killed. And my mum had to explain it to me really uncomfortably, the daughter of a dairy farmer, really uncomfortably kind of explaining, well, they mean like it's not murder. And I was like, but meat is murder, and why did they say that? And she's like, well, probably because the animal's dead or has to die to eat it. And I was like, well, but then it is murder.
It is,
and she was like, no, but it's not murder because it's not a human, it's an animal, and animals are there for us to eat. And I like remember I was a very obviously opinionated, like I still get, my whole family is still pretty hung up on me being this like very opinionated and how bad that is. But anyway, I sort of remember fighting that fact and being like, but it is murder because they're dying and they're being killed, and that's murder. And
do you think that planted the seed for you?
There's probably I guess pushed it back. But, you know, when you're talking about, that 15, 16-year-old, there was no option for me. There was no world in which my mum or anyone else was going to go and, like, investigate an alternative lifestyle or diet for me, because back then in the early 90s, I mean, there was no choice. Yeah, like it was you have to eat meat, you have to drink milk, because otherwise,
and the culture's
you won't
changed
be healthy.
Yeah, so much.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I was really lucky. I grew up in a Mormon family where eating vegetarian was actually quite actively encouraged, even in the 80s. But you know, like if you think about it now, the kids of today that are standing up and saying, "Hey, using animals is wrong," their peers are watching and listening and challenging, and then they're maybe coming over to their way of thinking. I think maybe we're probably heading off to a break now.
Can I just quickly say?
Oh, absolutely.
That was great, but I went vegetarian in the 1960s.
Good for you.
Very much a pioneer.
Listening to Father Time here.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's definitely the people who were doing that and it paved the way.
Yeah.
The culture changes, you know, each step of the way, those people who were the head of that wave changed the culture for the better, which is brilliant. Yes. Well done.
Well done for being old.
Well done to shame a 7-year-old. Yes.
We're going to go to another one. So, by the way, all of these songs that we're going to play, they're from Privateer, which is an outfit for a lot of both long-term vegans, Jeff and Damien. This song is called Belief/Belief. It's an instrumental.
Thank you. Got a big crop of tomatoes or plums in the garden this summer? Look after our precious wildlife and avoid using netting over your veggies and fruit trees. Nets can accidentally trap flying foxes, possums, and birds. Many of them don't survive their injuries. If you must use netting, make it safe for wildlife. For more information, go to wildlifevictoria.org.au or call 03 84 00 7300 if you see wildlife trapped in netting. Wildlife Victoria is a 3CR supporter.
And even subtropical rainforests that don't usually burn were actually on fire.
We have the obligation to care for country.
So much forest burnt that around 3 billion animals are either killed or displaced.
The more we push back against the colonial apparatus, the more positive change we can have in terms of addressing climate change.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
Welcome back. You are listening to 3CR's Freedom of Species. We are at the end third of our show and we've been having lots of fun talking about parenting vegan kids, raising the next compassionate generation. So we've been talking about such a vast range of topics and, you know, the issues, the pitfalls, the benefits, you know, just the general experience of raising vegan kids. What I'd really love to do now in the time that we have is maybe talk about things that we haven't talked about or anything that you'd want to have as a summary to your experience of raising a vegan child. Mark, if we start with you.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about every year having our son's birthday party and making, and it was always, well, for 10 years it's always been vegan, everything, cake. Sean's mum goes to a lot of trouble, you know, making themed cakes and different cake, loads of cake, and all that. Those new products that are there, the nuggets and the spring rolls and the samosas and that we can buy to, so all these people come over, the kids that have allergies for milk and eggs and just, you know, hammering down cake and taking cake home.
Because they can eat it as well.
Yeah. And all the other kids, I've heard them over different years going, coming in and going, "You got them nuggets again?" and stuff. And that relates to the idea of planting seeds that we don't know when they may germinate, but the thoughts that these people will go home and eat chicken nuggets again and stuff, but they know they don't have to. They know they could request that from their parents. Mm. And these thoughts, hopefully, you know, swim around the kids. Well, why do I need dairy for a cake? I don't. This is the best cake I've ever eaten. And hopefully those seeds germinate within them, who knows when, but hopefully that will lead them to make more compassionate choices in the future, in their futures, and therefore our futures as well.
Absolutely. And that's such a very positive thing, that seed of change that we plant with those wonderful experiences like the birthday parties. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And Lydia, how would you like to sum up your experience?
Yeah, I mean, we do the same thing. And I think, like, from when they've been quite small with birthday cakes and whatnot, we go all out, and it's partly to show that our kids can still be kids. You know, they can still have the amazing rainbow birthday cake. They can have the lolly bags that taste the same. They can have all the party food, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll continue doing that. And the kids know that as well. So if we're at a party or something and there's lolly bags and they'll say, "Oh, you know, is this got gelatin in it?" And they ask that specifically. They know what gelatin is.
Right.
Yep. I'll say, "Yep, you know, leave it here and we can get some lollies at home, or, you know, we can replace it." So they honestly, I really don't feel like they feel like they're missing out, to be honest. But
that's
just
great.
No, thinking, not at all.
No, but just thinking about, you know, the future, like when people say, ask us, like, "Well, if your kid wanted to eat meat, would you let them?" Like, of course, in the future, I don't plan on, you know, controlling my kids forever, just like
exactly.
Families who eat meat and aren't vegan choose what's on the plate at home. We're choosing what's on the plate now, and while they, you know, live with us in the future, obviously they can sort of make their own informed choices. But I really can't imagine a world in which my kids, growing up the way they've grown up and sort of having all the information that they have, asking the really informed questions that they ask now and being so sort of compassionate towards animals. I really can't imagine a world in which they would turn around and choose to like eat meat or consume dairy or consume eggs knowingly. I just can't imagine it. If it happens, I'll be proved wrong, but it doesn't feel like that's going to be something that happens. Mm. I think that they've got their convictions, and I just can see them like, you know, getting stronger and stronger in those.
Yeah. And I think going into the future, they're always going to ask these difficult questions. And, you know, even if worst case scenario, they don't stick to it, how many people have they influenced in the time that they have because they've asked those questions? And there's always kids out there that are willing to ask these difficult questions, as you were when you saw that Meters Murder, you know, graffiti, you know, as I did when I was, you know, I was asking all these questions when I was a kid as well.
Mm.
I mean, it's such a powerful thing. And, you know, it could be explained as one of the most hopeful things to do is to raise a child with a compassionate lifestyle in this day and age. Thank you so much for the both of you coming on. We really appreciate that.
Thank you. And I like that hopeful.
Absolutely.
Finish that you said
I think the hopeful finish is a really positive and important thing to have. Yeah. And you know, is there any sort of advice that you can say? Like, say if someone is looking, they're vegan, and they're saying, you know, just really quickly in a sentence, what advice would you give to someone who is about to have a baby, you know, in raising a vegan child? Just a really quick snapshot.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I would say seek out the support of other vegans.
Yeah, definitely, and get informed.
Perfect. Like, speak to vegan dietitians to reassure yourself.
And, absolutely.
Yeah,
and people who've done this before as well.
Yeah,
and be prepared for
you
know, some backlash from people who
don't stand up for what you're passionate about.
Aren't as compassionate as they ought to be.
Yeah.
I mean, we're changing the world one child at a time with what we do, which is brilliant.
Brilliant.
And, you know, one day we hope in the future we will have a world where animals, including our little Moo Moo who's wandering around the studio, aren't seen as something that, you know, we use or own or can exploit with an unquestioning action. Yeah. Thank you both of you for coming onto the show. It has been really fantastic, really informative. We're going to head out now with the last one from Jeff and Damien's outfit, musical outfit, Privateer. And by the way, Jeff is a vegan and also a parent.
Good man.
So, yes, this is great. This one's called The Fall, which is another instrumental. So thank you both for coming along.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's been terrific.
And just a few final little things about the show. We go to air 1 till 2 every Sunday. Tune in live via 3CR. Subscribe to us on your favourite podcast apps. All our previous shows are available at 3cr.org.au/freedom of species, and I believe in the notes for this show you're going to put in some links to some vegan parenting groups, that kind of thing, is that right?
So we'll pop in some links
for any further information. You've got any feedback on the show, anything like that, freedomofspecies@gmail.com is our email address. You can also contact us on social media as well. Stay tuned for the next show, which is Rotations, which brings you all kinds of different music from presenters across the 3CR network. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.